When his brothers arrived back in Egypt a second time, they were taken to Joseph's residence rather than the public space where he conducted official government business. At this point, Joseph released Simeon from prison and hosted a meal for his 11 brothers. Amazingly, Joseph's brothers still had no idea as to the true identity of Joseph. Nor did Joseph know yet if the integrity of the brothers had changed during the years he had been separated from them. Chapter 44 records a test Joseph devised to determine the current character and integrity of his brothers. He ordered his steward to hide his silver ceremonial cup in Benjamin's bag before the brothers departed from Canaan. Then Joseph arrested the brothers and accused them of stealing the cup. However, Joseph agreed to punish only the one in whose bag the cup was found. By observing his older brother's reaction to Benjamin's tribulation, he could assess their true character. When the steward exposed the missing cup in Benjamin's bag, his 10 brothers ripped their garments as a sign of extreme anguish. When Joseph confronted them, Judah spoke up. He explained the grief Benjamin's enslavement would cause his father. Then he offered to substitute himself for his youngest brother. He would freely become Joseph's slave if Benjamin were allowed to return home to his father. Judah's complete selflessness created a climactic moment for the brothers. And here's where our highlighted verses begin. The Quarterly's author divided today's lesson into four subsections. The first is called Revealed, and it covers verses 1 through 4 of chapter 45. Verses 1 through 3 read, Joseph could no longer keep his composure in front of all his attendants, so he called out, "Send everyone away from me." No one was with him when he revealed his identity to his brothers, but he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and also Pharaoh's household heard it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But they could not answer him because they were terrified in his presence. Wow, what a revelation. A firm-faced man, not showing any emotion, listened intently as a translator translated Judah's answer from Hebrew into Egyptian. The man wore a straight, unpleated robe that indicated he held the office of vizier. A vizier was a special advisor to the Pharaoh. Among other things, he made sure that the local governors were doing their jobs well and that everything was running smoothly in the government. For a moment, the room was silent. 9 frightened brothers lay prostrate on the floor before this Egyptian vizier. Only Judah stood as they waited to hear the official's response to Judah's proposal. Judah had offered to become the Egyptian slave if the vizier would allow his brothers to go free. Around the room, there would have been numerous Egyptian attendants, appropriate for a man of the vizier status. In Egypt, the vizier was second only to the Pharaoh in authority. The man's answer would determine the brothers' fate. So far, every indication pointed to an unfavorable outcome. The boys, that's Benjamin's, loss would devastate his elderly father in Canaan. These brothers were also keenly aware of their role in his sorrow. They had promised their father to guard the boy's life with their own. What occurred next surely startled them. "Send everyone away from me," yelled the vizier. The brothers did not understand the words because the official spoke in Egyptian. However, they could not fail to notice the vizier's excited tone of voice and how quickly the Egyptian attendants emptied the room. Suddenly, the brothers were alone with this formidable Egyptian official. This abrupt change would have compounded their uncertainty and fear. Joseph had cleared the room because he could no longer keep his composure. Tears poured down his face. He wept so loudly that the attendants he had just dismissed still heard him crying from the adjacent chambers they were in. Whatever initiated this emotional outbreak, Joseph was ready for reconciliation with his estranged brothers. Once more, Joseph addressed his bewildered brothers. This time he did not rely on an interpreter. He spoke directly to them in their native Hebrew, not Egyptian as he had spoken previously. Even more surprising to the brothers were his words, "I am Joseph." Joseph followed this impulsive revelation with an urgent inquiry. Is my father still alive? Talk about being scared. The brothers didn't or couldn't answer. Surely they recall their treatment of Joseph 22 years earlier. They had sold him to slave traders traveling to Egypt. Somehow, by some unexplainable set of circumstances, the second in command in Egypt now claimed to be their younger brother. The situation was terrifying. Was Joseph about to extract a terrible revenge? Verse 4 reads, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Please come near me.' And they came near. 'I am Joseph, your brother,' he said, 'the one you sold into Egypt.' Joseph summoned his brothers to move closer. The imperative is plural in the Hebrew text, indicating that Joseph wanted all of his brothers together around him. Judah had taken the first steps toward reconciliation when he approached Joseph to beg for Benjamin's life and save his father undue distress. Joseph facilitated the next step by asking the other brothers to join him and Judah. They've moved closer to reconciliation of their broken relationship by immediately complying to Joseph's request. Their physical proximity now enabled intimate conversation between the brothers. Joseph reaffirmed his identity by repeating, 'I am Joseph, your brother.' He immediately added a distinguishing detail, 'the one you sold into Egypt.' This honorable phrase confirmed to the brothers that Joseph was actually who he said he was, but it did not announce payback. Believers, that's us, should be willing to seek reconciliation with those who are alienated from us. Reconciliation may not always be possible, but we must always be willing to seek the possibility. All injured parties must be willing in order for genuine reconciliation to occur, and reconciliation must ensure safety of all involved." Remnant is the second subsection in today's lesson, and it covers verses 5 through 8. Verses 4 and 5 read, "And now don't be grieved or angry with yourselves for selling me here, because God sent me ahead of you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there will be 5 more years without plowing or harvesting." Sin always harms the sinner. The Hebrew word grieved can refer either to physical pain or mental anguish. Here, the term denotes the mental and spiritual anguish the brothers' treatment of Joseph caused them after they had sold him to slave traders. The guilt of their deed and its subsequent consequences also made the brothers angry with themselves. In some ways, Jacob's 10 sons had suffered more during the past 22 years than their younger brother. Every day they saw the sadness in their father's face, and they knew they had caused it. They had to live with their crime and their inability to undo the damage they had caused. Joseph helped soothe the anguish the brothers were feeling by explaining to them that his presence in Egypt was part of God's divine plan. 3 times in verses 5 through 8, Joseph assigned accountability to God for his journey to Egypt. Verses 5 through 11 of Genesis 37 record a much younger Joseph dreaming that one day his brothers would bow down to him. At the time, he failed to understand or comprehend the dream's role in God's purpose. The dream consequently caused contention within the family. Now, his brothers literally bowed down to him, and Joseph understood it signified that God had orchestrated the events to preserve life. Joseph's understanding of God's plan enabled him to forgive his brothers. Contrast in this passage between you, Joseph's brothers, and God is stark. The brothers had sold Joseph into slavery, but God elevated him to the second most powerful individual in the region. The brothers had shipped him away from Canaan, but God brought him to Egypt. They intended evil, but God pronounced good or produced good. God's providential actions sometimes employs the malicious behavior of corrupt humanity. The ultimate example of divine reversal of wicked purpose is the crucifixion of Christ. The very deed by which Satan sought to destroy Christ became the means by which God saves sinners. Romans 8:28 tells us that God's sovereignty can be the source of great comfort in troubling times. Joseph pointed out to the brothers that more troubling times were to come, as 5 more years of famine were still on the horizon. Verses 7 and 8 read, and here Joseph is still talking to his brothers. God sent me ahead of you to establish you as a remnant within the land, to keep you alive by great deliverance. Therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to the Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Here Joseph explains to his brothers that his presence in Egypt is part of God's divine plan. This is the second usage of the verb sent in Joseph's statement. The verb describes God dispatching a person on an official mission as God's representative. Thus, Joseph represented God on an assignment to save lives. God put Joseph in his current position to store food for the Egyptians and surrounding populations to save lives during the prolonged famine. Remnant is an important theological term. It occurs repeatedly in the Old Testament to designate survivors of a catastrophic event in Israel. The remnant are heirs of God's covenant with Israel. They were spared to pass on God's blessing to both the next generation and to other nations. This passage recalls God telling Abraham in Genesis 15 about his descendants being slaves in a foreign land for 400 years. God had sent Joseph to Egypt so the family of Jacob could survive. Israel, or Jacob, would be in Egypt, away from the land God promised them, for 4 centuries. Even after 4 centuries, the Israelite people would survive, and God would give him the land of Canaan. God is faithful all the time. The great deliverance, in verse 7, describes the incredible series of events that had propelled Joseph from a nomadic Canaanite shepherd to second in command in Egypt. Amazingly and interestingly, 430 years later, God would emancipate Jacob's descendants by an equally inconceivable series of events in which an 80-year-old exiled felon toppled the awesome power of Egypt with a wooden staff. God is truly amazing. The word therefore, starting verse 8, connects verse 8 to the previous 2 verses. Those verses record certain facts Joseph presented to his brothers. First, the famine was just beginning and would grow much worse. Second, without divine intervention, the brothers and their family would certainly starve to death. More than that was, more than saving their lives was at stake. The deaths of Jacob's family would nullify God's covenant promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In this relatively brief monologue, Joseph had asserted 3 times that God was responsible for sending him to Egypt. God, not Joseph, is a central character in the narrative. God sent Joseph to Egypt. God made him second in command in Egypt. The basic meaning of the verb is to put something somewhere. Here, it denotes appointing someone, Joseph, to a position, the office of vizier. Although the Pharaoh appointed Joseph to the office he held, it was by God's divine intervention that caused the series of events that led to the appointment. Father to the Pharaoh, used in verse 8, was a title for the office of vizier and other high-ranking advisors to the king. Lord of his entire household and ruler over all of Egypt highlighted the scope of Joseph's authority. The first description denotes him as chief administrator of Pharaoh's government. The second indicates the control he extended had over all the Egyptian territory. Reunion is the 3rd subsection of today's lesson, and it covers verses 9 through 13. These verses read, and here again, Joseph is still talking to his brothers. Return to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me without delay. You can settle in the land of Goshen and be near me. You, your children, your grandchildren, your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There I will sustain you, for there will be 5 more years of famine. Otherwise, you, your household, and everything you have will become destitute. Look, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin can see that I am the one speaking to you. Tell my father about my glory in Egypt and all that you have seen, and bring my father here quickly. Back in Genesis 45:3, Joseph's first thought had been of his father. Now, having clarified that God was responsible for his present position in Egypt, Joseph returned his attention to his father. He exhorted his brothers to return quickly to Canaan and tell their father of the good news of Joseph's success. They were not to waste time, but to go and bring Jacob to Egypt immediately. Joseph not only wished to see his father, he wanted him to settle in Egypt under his protection. Joseph saw Jacob and his family's survival essential to his relocation. Pointing to the family becoming destitute rather than the harsher threat of starvation was masterful persuasion. This would surely cause Jacob to recall his previous destitution when his devious conduct forced him to flee from Esau's wrath. Raising himself up out of poverty had entailed many years of hard labor working for Laban. Now Joseph offered to provide everything he needed for survival of himself, his family, and his livestock. The mention of Jacob's children and grandchildren in verse 10 alluded to God's faithfulness. In Genesis 15:5, God had promised Abraham that his descendants would become as numerous as the stars in the sky. Joseph offered Goshen as the location for his family to settle, indicates that he anticipated reconciliation with his brothers. Goshen was in the northeast section of the Nile Delta. It was located on the route between Egypt and Canaan. This normally provided water and for livestock. Because of the famine, Joseph promised to provide feed for his family's animals if they migrated to Egypt. The interjection look in verse 12 demanded the brothers' attention. It also emphasized what followed. Joseph invited them to be eyewitnesses to the truthfulness of his claim that he was, in fact, who he said he was. Even though the brothers were looking at a high-ranking Egyptian official who was dressed in Egyptian clothing and whose skin was adorned with Egyptian cosmetic and who radiated with the scent of Egyptian perfume, they were, in fact, looking at their long-lost brother. The fundamental sense of glory in the Old Testament is that which gives one value. God's glory is the manifestation of his presence and power. Human glory often relates to one's wealth. Here, the idea that which is that which would cause other people to honor Joseph. It encompasses his status as well as his riches. Verse 13 ends as verse 9 had begun. Joseph emphasized the urgency of bringing his father to him quickly. After learning of his son's faith, Jacob, likely, would wish to be reunited with him. The command bring probably suggests some limitation on Jacob's part. Because of his age, he would very likely need assistance to travel as far as Egypt. Joseph would provide whatever was needed when the family arrived. Reconciliation for God's people is found in his provisions for his people. Restored is the final subsection of this lesson, and it covers verses 14 and 15. Those verses read, "Then Joseph threw his arms around his brothers and wept on his shoulders. Joseph kissed each of his brothers as he wept, and afterwards his brothers talked with him." Reconciliation with his estranged brothers, including Benjamin, released a flood of emotion in Joseph. The Bible does not indicate that there was ever any trouble between Joseph and Benjamin, Rachel's two sons. The older brothers were adults when they sold Joseph to slavery. Joseph was still a youth, and Benjamin was even younger. Those two must have thought a lot about each other and missed seeing one another. Joseph kissed each of his brothers as a sign of peace. The Bible doesn't mention any of the older brothers weeping. Instead, after kissing them, his brothers talked with him. Their behavior after Jacob's death, recorded in Genesis 50:15-18, indicated that they still do not trust Joseph. His exalted status put him in a position to extract a terrible revenge against him if he wished to do so, and they knew it. However, forgiveness is an essential component of reconciliation. Forgiveness springs from the mercy of the one offended. Believers are to carry an attitude of forgiveness and openness. Romans 12:18 And Hebrews 12:14 commands us to live at peace with everyone. Verse 45:15 ends our highlighted verses for this lesson. The last part of chapter 45 tells us that the Pharaoh was pleased with what Joseph had done about the brothers' return trip to Canaan, about the equipment, provisions, supplies, and gifts Joseph sent to Jacob on the Pharaoh's behalf, about Jacob's pleasant surprise at the news about his son Joseph, and about Jacob's decision to move to Egypt. Chapter 46 records all who traveled to Egypt with Jacob. There were 66, including Jacob and his direct descendants, not counting his son's wives. Chapter 47 records Jacob and his family arriving in Egypt and settling in Goshen, about the results of the continued famine on Egypt and Canaan, and about Joseph taking control of all the money in Egypt as well as the livestock, which he turned over to Pharaoh, and in return the Pharaoh provided food to feed the people. The end of chapter 47 through chapter 50 records the events surrounding the end of life blessings Jacob and Joseph gave and their death. These verses, the last verses in Genesis, set the stage for what would begin to happen in Exodus and come to fruition in Joshua. God was going to make Jacob's family into a great nation, lead them out of Egypt, and bring them to the land he had promised. The nation would rely heavily on this promise, and Joseph emphasized his belief that God would do what he had promised. The book of Genesis gives us rich descriptions of the lives of many great men and women who walked with God. They sometimes succeeded, but often failed. Yet we learned much by reading their biographies. Where did they get their motivation and courage? They realized that God was with them despite their inadequacies, and there were inadequacies. Knowing this should encourage each of us to be faithful to God, to rely on His guidance, and to utilize the potential He has given us in spite of our inadequacies, and we do have them. Let's close with a prayer. Lord, please forgive our sins and make us thankful for the many blessings you send our way every day. Lord, help us to forgive and reconcile when possible, wherever it's needed. Help us to live the way you want us to live every day, regardless of the situation and circumstances we face. In Jesus' name, amen.